there's something I think about when I'm out in the ocean, and y'all are probably looking at the trees being like, what are they chewing on here exactly? But I'll tell you, this is just comes from a place of sobriety. When I'm out in the water, I think about how, right, true or false, are you not touching all the water in the ocean? Like right, there's no break. Right. You know what I mean? There's like someone surfing in Vietnam and they're in the ocean. What's separating them from me where I'm surfing? It's a body of water. And obviously we know that there's an electric charge that exists in the water. There's a grounding aspect of it. You know, it makes me think a lot about the network. This concept of transactions based in values, and even though we may be very far from someone across the world, you can zap them, and it's almost like you're sending or participating in that value system with very few breakers in between what you're doing.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to episode 26 of the Bitcoin Path podcast. This is a show where we have deeper conversations about Bitcoin and personal sovereignty, about how this new magic internet money is changing the world and changing ourselves at the same time. In this episode, I dive into a conversation with Blake Warlamont, Dom Bay, and Zach Zager. We're over at the Swan House, deep in the heart of Bitcoin country in El Salvador, in El Zante, right on the coast. It's a beautiful setting, and we dive into some really great topics, kind of assessing the current state of Bitcoin adoption in El Salvador, as well as exploring some of the parallels between surfing, being a surfer, and being a Bitcoiner, and touching on a little bit of price action. It was a little bit dated. We recorded this back in the fall of 2023, and so I'm getting to a backlog of podcasts, which I'm really excited to share with you guys. Talk a little bit about price action, then we also dive into some deeper philosophical quandaries that I think you might find interesting. So, looking forward to sharing this with you guys. Before we go to the podcast, I'd like to share this recap video of our last retreat that we did in El Zante. Here's a recap of our Citadel Theory retreat in El Salvador. Keep an eye out for our next adventure. If you're interested in joining our community and participating in future events, go to thebitcoinpath.com, to the events page, and see all of our upcoming adventures, as well as more information about how to apply and join our tribe. With that, let's get into this conversation with my buddies, Blake, Dom, and Zach. We're here in El Salvador at the Swan House, in beautiful El Zante, and privileged to have these fine gentlemen here. So I just wanted to jump on a pod real quick and record a little conversation. All three of you are very near and dear to my heart, and we just came off of a surf session this morning. Some of us enjoyed it a little more than others, and we just wanted to share a little bit of our experience here so far, and then jump into whatever we want to talk about. So here with me, if you guys can introduce yourself, is Zach Zager. And Zach, introduce yourself.
Thanks for having me here, John. This is actually my first Bitcoin-related podcast that I've ever been on. Maybe the first podcast I've ever been on in general. I was referenced on another Bitcoin podcast, the Blue Collar Bitcoin podcast.
You.
For reasons that you'll have to go listen to and maybe we'll get into here. But it's been fantastic being down here in El Salvador with a bunch of swans and friends. I have been working for coming on 2 years as a data analyst and wearing a couple other hats as well at Swan Bitcoin, the best place to buy Bitcoin in the United States and potentially the world.
Check one. Can you hear me? Can you guys hear me?
Oh yeah, I hear you loud and clear.
My name is Dom Bay, and less important than who I am is just where I am, and I'm just happy to be here alive. I did not make it to the surf session with you guys in the morning because I was coming from San Salvador, staying up there. And so I went to go surf, and my board leash snapped when I was pretty far out. So I had to swim back in. And I was looking around for Zach. I thought maybe he might come snag me out, dude, because I was struggling. But I realized I had to dig in, and so I just stumbled upon you guys here. And, gosh, it's just so great to be here. Look, this is unbelievable. So happy to be alive.
Well,
genuinely.
Dude, I'm glad you made it. And having lost my leash or having lost my board and the leash cut out. What's up, you guys? Dude, it's crazy. It's a serious experience. Like you're out in the middle of the fucking ocean, giant waves crashing. And as you can see behind us, it's not very small. What's up, Pedro? It's not very small right now, so I'm glad you're all right, man.
Yeah, it was, I just tried to stay calm, and it wasn't that bad. I'm going to, I like to jazz it up. In a month from now, it'll be a near-death story. but yeah, it was good. Losing the board sucks. And the board is gone now, never to be found again.
Yeah.
So...
R.I.P.
Shout out to Punta Roca Bob if you're watching. I'm sorry, I got you on the new board. I got you covered, Blake.
Yeah, we'll make up for it in tides.
Yeah.
Just like with that shout out alone, the amount of viewers we've got on this show is just he's gonna be flooded with business now. So, what's up, Blake?
Blake Warlow over here. You can call me Balake if you'd like. There is something to be said about being humbled, especially on the first day of a trip. I think it's better to have that happen up front because then you kind of know what power the ocean holds wherever you're going out.
Absolutely.
And yeah, it sucks you lost the board, but hey, you know what? It's just foam. The better part of the story is we got Dom here.
Yeah.
We're going to charge it tomorrow. So get him next time, Tiger.
Yeah, absolutely.
We get it next time. There's always another board.
There's always another board for you, Dom. We'll find a way.
That's a beautiful metaphor, right?
Metaphor of life. Another thing
there's
is
always another board.
You have time out there to think when you're just bobbing like a cork in the water. And I was just thinking, why did the SEC's decision not to appeal the Grayscale case? Why did it not do anything? And I was just sitting there. Floating. Then I was like, well, if I don't make it out of here, like, could anyone ever get, this is the self-custody? And I'm like, you just have some of those Bitcoin thoughts when you're out there, and then you go, and then you just remember, like, I got to get back on shore to see what happens, So.
Absolutely. I think, that's one of the things that I like to talk about a lot and that I'm really interested in is just how, being in nature, like going out into the ocean in an environment like this, is going to confront, you're going to be confronted with the real questions of life. Like you're putting yourself into a vulnerable situation. There are no guarantees. And that's true just in general, right? We live in a world in which tomorrow is not guaranteed. We don't know what's going to happen. There are utter uncertainties in life that we just can't confirm. And so when you're in that environment, it just puts you back into this like re-centered, grounded state of mind where for me, I'm just appreciative of like being alive, being here, being able to like enjoy time with friends. So like, dude, those kinds of experiences and Zach, I'm curious to hear your perspective because we went out today. You've surfed how many times? Like twice before?
Yeah, so since we're going to be discussing surfing a lot on this show, I'll give an overview of my surfing experience.
We will get into price action too at Bitcoin. Just know that Zach's an analyst. So
I have very limited surfing experience. I learned about 6 years ago through a lesson or two in Costa Rica. Shout out to Jaco for everyone who's been out there.
What's up, Jaco?
I lost $500.
Jaco is a place. It's a town. They've got great
burritos.
What up, Jaco? But so I took a lesson or two there, surfed a bit, and then about a month later, I surfed for an hour or two in Lima in Peru. But it's been 6 years since I've been out, so it's almost like being out with fresh eyes, fresh, like you lose it a little bit if you're not at a certain level, in my opinion. Absolutely. So it was cool to get out there and be kind of a newbie in something and feel humbled, but also having some great teachers around me. So these guys were out here. Well, Dom hadn't quite gotten in yet, but I'm sure he would have had some great advice, like don't lose your board in the surf. Yeah. Very crucial. Check your leash.
The leash I had to have been from like 1986. It snapped so easily.
Yeah.
When it snapped, yeah, it wasn't even, like, it just like melted off, you know?
Right. It just goes to show the power of Mother Nature, and in that power is its beauty. And that's the overlap I've always felt with Bitcoin, is like, there's this sense of like empowerment when you utilize what Bitcoin has to offer. And the same sort of, you know, knowing your limits and knowing when to take on risk and knowing when to play a little more conservatively is the same mentality you have to approach surfing with, right? It's because there's going to be those instances where you're super excited and thrilled to be out there and participating, but maybe you don't know what your limits are quite yet, and if you push yourself, you'll find out really quickly like where that line is. And so it's really a great arbiter of truth. And of course, you're in nature, which is an even more, like, I think, profound experience for all of us. Like, every time I get done surfing, I have this just like sense of fulfillment that I haven't always found. And I've played a lot of sports, and it's something about really like mastering that battle with yourself out there, because there's really not anyone you can point fingers at when you're surfing. Like, yeah, places can get crowded and contended, but at the end of the day, it's really you versus the wave. And the same can be said when we kind of embark on our Bitcoin journeys, right? The whole idea is to have some self-sovereignty in our lives and take full accountability for our decisions, from a lifestyle perspective, from a financial perspective, and a social perspective even, right? Like who we choose to spend our time with, who we choose to kind of build our futures with. It really is just a beautiful thing that this country in specific, where we're sitting now, has brought us all here to do just those two things. It's that's how I'm, you know, looking at this trip, is like, I wouldn't want it any other way. Like being able to enjoy a lifestyle I love, surfing, and also working on something that I think is really important and that will matter, you know, years into the future.
Yeah.
So
100%. And I'm a really firm believer that our connection to nature as humans is paramount to our like personal development, to our spiritual development. Being immersed in nature is it's just the path towards like enlightenment, if you want to use those words, right? And in a very similar way, I think Bitcoin is helping humans to reconnect to nature by like connecting our money back to nature, back to natural forces. Whereas like with fiat dollars that are able to be printed ad infinitum, there's no real connection to like real life production or sacrifice. It's all just a complete fabrication, right? It's a lie. But in nature, if you live by a lie, like, you die, basically. If you go out into the ocean and you don't have the skills, you don't have the actual proof of work to navigate that environment, then you're going to be humbled, like we said. And in life, it's the same thing. In our civilization, we're seeing these, like, we're seeing the effects of a money that's built on a lie that's pervaded through our society. So that's what I love about what you're saying, is like, what's cool about El Salvador is we are here, like, we're in nature as deep as we could get. We're literally in the jungle, like, and what a beautiful metaphor to see, like, what's happening in the world, where this place where nature is so abundant and vibrant is sort of a ground zero testing point for Bitcoin adoption and seeing what's like, how it could actually impact a society.
Yeah, it's definitely no accident, right? That I think, you know, we talked about, we're going to Freedom Fest in Costa Rica. There's adopting Bitcoin here. You know, that Brazil's putting on something coming up, and there's so many surfs. It's not an accident that there's, you know, the ocean is near some of these circular economies, and that vibe of just like having everything you need, proof of work, is really interesting. And of course, if you're a surfer, I mean, it's awesome. I'll go to
it's
any
pretty nice.
Yeah, like anyone doing a conference or anything by the beach, I'm there. If we can surf, talk Bitcoin, learn some things, meet some cool new people, like that's the best trip around right now.
Right. So, did you have anything to add? I had a question for all of you guys, because on this kind of like same topic. Because one of the things that I find interesting about Bitcoin, beyond like the what it's doing for individuals and like helping us preserve our wealth and all that stuff, but the way that it's bringing people together and the way that it's kind of like attracting certain people who believe in personal freedom and preserving that for themselves and for their families, it really is kind of creating a community or eclectic different communities. Not everyone gets along with each other, as they shouldn't, or obviously as we could see on Twitter. Like when we're out in the water, when we're surfing together, it's something that we enjoy doing together as well. It's something that brings people together. So I'm wondering what your guys' experience has been like, both in the Bitcoin community and then maybe how surfing is like, helped you to develop friendships or anything like that?
Well, I have pretty limited experience surfing still, but even with that, you can feel the sense of community when you're out just in the water with the other crazy people who've decided to spend their whole morning just getting bashed around by waves with the hope that you'll catch one or a few and have a few moments of just utter sublime excitement, which I didn't catch any big waves, but even just seeing someone else up there on a wave, you get that vicarious feeling of, wow, someone, even if it's not me, someone up there is having a great time, having the that peak experience. And so it just creates that other sense of community, of doing something with just enough sense of danger but also adrenaline rush that certain people are just drawn to. And I think there is a parallel with Bitcoin. Like, a lot of Bitcoin is just holding the Bitcoin and feeling like the price is just stuck there or going down. And I'm not even a big like number go up price guy, but it is interesting to compare that parallel of surfing with a lot of work for a few moments of utter success and jubilation with Bitcoin, where you have, you know, a lot of suffering until you're out there and then you get to ride that wave. And I think there's an adrenaline junkie component to Bitcoin as well. So yeah, that's my takes right now. I'd love to hear from you guys too about how you feel about it as more experienced surfers.
Those are good takes, and I know Blake has some good ones. There's some I think about when I'm out in the ocean, And y'all are probably looking at the trees being like, what are they chewing on here exactly? But I'll tell you, this is just comes from a place of sobriety. When I'm out in the water, I think about how, right, true or false, are you not touching all the water in the ocean? Like, right, there's no break.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's yeah. Like someone surfing in Vietnam and they're in the ocean. What's separating them from me where I'm surfing? It's a body of water. And obviously we know that there's an electric charge that exists in the water. There's a grounding aspect of it. You know, it makes me think a lot about the network, this concept of transactions based in values. And even though we may be very far from someone across the world, you can zap them. And it's almost like you're sending or participating in that value system with very few, breakers in between what you're doing. Take, for example, something like fiat where you're paying cash, right? You don't have that same feeling of a value system because that value system, as you mentioned in this discussion, is very convoluted, complex, and relies somewhat very heavily upon taking resources from those and kind of concentrating to them, to those who have resources to gain more resources. So, you know, that's something that I think about a lot, and that connectedness is something I think about when I'm out in the ocean and where it relates to Bitcoin.
Dom, you mean to tell me you didn't chew on any of those mushrooms before we started recording?
No.
You want to look at something?
Just want to make sure it's on.
Yeah, that one's on.
He just wants to make mine was off. Gem right there.
Yeah, I know. I think that ours was messed up, but.
We're working out the kinks. We'll only know afterwards.
This is
just the beginning, you know.
This is episode one.
Yeah, this is block one, dude.
Exactly.
But going back to what you said, Zach, I love the mindset of, like, you have to remain patient in a way. Like, the thrill of a price, you know, pump or dropping into a big set wave is, you know, the amount of time, like, spent enjoying that is very short-lived, and we all know that. Like, there is this component to having a low time preference in both surfing and Bitcoin. Like, you can go a whole session where you might not get more than a few waves, but if you make it count, you could still be like, that was a session of a lifetime, because there's this, like, real, I think, treasure in having just a low time preference and being able to, you know, not swing at every pitch, wait for what you think is, like, truly something you'll be able to tackle and, like, enjoy to the fullest. And, like, it's important to have those thrills, I think, though. Like, the price run-up of, you know, 2017 is what really piqued my interest into Bitcoin. And I think without that, I might have, like, taken a back seat and maybe not been as excited to look further into it. And the same can be said about surfing, when you finally get that thrill of dropping in on a big wave and you know, you see your homies and your friends on the beach are, like, saluting you for, like, you know, a job well done. You're just feeling so accomplished and proud for that, you know, albeit short moment in time. But it gets you, you know, like, chomping at the bit to want to do it again. And yeah, so there's a very important piece of surfing that most people overlook, which is being patient and knowing that you don't have to go on every wave. There'll be that wave, you know, the ocean will continually provide. So it's all a matter of, like, knowing when you're ready for the right wave. Going back to the community question, that is also, like, key, right? It's like sort of what I just said about sharing the stoke. Like, the best feeling is having someone else to share those moments with. Like,
right.
You know, you could get a wave of a lifetime, but it doesn't mean as much if there's not someone there to see it. And that sounds a little, like, against the whole point of being, you know, self-sovereign and, like, you know, expressing yourself and having some, like, freedoms in your own life that you don't feel like you need to impress anybody over. But
there is like this community aspect to where you want to really like channel your energy and give your time towards things and people where you feel the sense of community and something like, you know, you're part of bigger, part of something bigger than yourself. And that doesn't always happen because, yeah, there, it can be rough. And, you can have these experiences where it takes a lot of time to work through these things. Like, am I on the right path? Am I really, like, in the right circles or surfing the right places? Like, so, yeah, knowing, I guess, what your style is and building around that is mm-hmm. key as well.
Yeah, I think we are naturally like communal creatures. Like we evolved to be in tribes of like 100 to 200 people, and so our whole like sense of well-being and worth is going to be associated with our placement within that like structure, the hierarchy, and community, an actual community. So in a very real sense, like, we're kind of nodes in a network, and if we're just on our own, we're fully disconnected, the lone wolf, so to speak, then there's going to be, you're going to be missing something. It's not going to feel the same.
Yeah, and when you lose your board and you die alone, Bob, with no one to talk to, it's also can be lonely sometimes, you know?
I feel you, man. I feel you.
Some Blake was saying, as far as like, I use this a lot, I'm sure you guys do too, for people that are trying to get into Bitcoin, I use wave size and the choice of where you start surfing, right? Like when people hit me up and they go, hey, I'm thinking of taking a second mortgage on my house and putting everything I have into Bitcoin because it's going to hit, I'm like, what you're telling me is that you're going to surf for the first time at Mavericks and you're going to see how that goes. And,
yeah,
and even what Blake said, like, even if you catch that wave miraculously, like, you're almost like not even equipped to handle it. You can fumble even doing well, but most likely you're going to get wrecked. And I use that a lot, that metaphor, with people that are just getting in.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was telling Zach today. I'm like, dude, we're charging this, but this is not like the optimal learning conditions, right? Because we were going out in 10 to 15 foot surf, and yeah, we were staying on the shoulder, staying inside, and I was guiding him through the process, but it's kind of like we were kind of jumping into full self-custody like right away.
Yeah.
He's learning how to stamp his keys into metal and everything like that.
Yeah, we weren't even out for 5 minutes before John starts bringing up I like to compare learning to surf to learning how to use Bitcoin. So Once you're in Bitcoin, everything becomes a Bitcoin metaphor. But I think that's just because we're so excited about it. And it really is such a unique and interdisciplinary field that you can connect it to a lot of different topics. But I do fortunately have the luxury of being a strong swimmer, despite what some of the folks here might have first perceived when they met me. But so I wasn't totally a fish out of water out there, to mix metaphors, but yeah, those waves were definitely intimidating, but I had to take a little more of a slow approach and just ride it out, learn how to turn the board and just sit on the board stable. That was challenging for my first time really being out there and learning about surfing, but I'm lucky to have had a great teacher who has given me tips on how to be sovereign out there, really. But one thing I've been thinking a lot about on this trip and since being on this recent leg of travel that I've been on going to Pacific Bitcoin is how there's so many different types of sovereignty in and of itself. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Blake, since you just started the Crypto Sovereignty book by Eric Kaysen, I believe.
Yeah, good read so far. Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, I started that too on the flight.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd love to hear how my take compares to what you guys are reading in the book. So
shout out to Eric.
Yeah.
Fucking love you. I love you, Eric Kaysen. I wish you were here, man.
Yeah, you're here in our spirits. And if you were here for this conversation, that'd be excellent. So come down, come through. thinking about what it means to be sovereign and what we think of as a sovereign. So typically in classical political science, a sovereign is the state. It's the top political organizational entity within a region. And within Bitcoin and libertarian circles, sovereign often means to be self-reliant, to be in control of one's destiny. But I've been thinking about where exactly that comes from. So if you are a state and you're sovereign, it's highly unlikely that it's the result of one individual with total control over the entire area. But it's more about one person or entity, namely the state, having control over control and influence and mutual relationships and commitments with other people. So in a sense, sovereignty, even at the highest state level, comes not from power within one, but within a network, within a whole group of entities. So in a sense, sovereignty is your ability to draw upon the collective powers and resources of the people you're around. And one example of that was me being in, we're going on this hike about an hour and a half from here up by these gorgeous waterfalls, literally up through the waterfalls. And I did not have the proper footwear at all for this hike up through waterfalls. And one of our colleagues, David from Swan, had these extra water shoes that really came through for me. And it got me thinking about, I am fortunate and lucky enough to have a network that can help me get through tough and unexpected situations. So that is a form of sovereignty in and of itself. And having groups like this, a network of people who can help you be sovereign. Now, of course, if there's a doomsday scenario and you just have the guns and ammo in your basement, that maybe that's the type of sovereignty that you'll want in that situation. But at least for now, in our world, that's, I would say, pretty good, but one that we're aspiring to make even better through Bitcoin and related projects and principles. Having a strong network is just as important to self-sovereignty as being a one-man army.
The, you know, actual possibilities of us, you know, living out on our own, collecting our own water, feeding ourselves is obviously impossible in this day and age. At least we're not equipped with that sort of tool set and knowledge. And so the biggest component to being self-sovereign is actually communal, as ironic as that sounds. It's like, how are you able to live within your own means and in accord with how you see you know, your life with people that are able to sort of uplift you or raise your standards of living through time. And the word I want to go back to that you use is the teacher component, right? How do we really make sure that those we do decide to interact with or build communities around are showing us the best practices and mean well for our, you know, lives? And that's what's great about, I think, this trip and the Bitcoin community at this day and age, is there are some great teachers now that are really helping to shine the light and just, you know, help people like really figure things out. And, you know, going back to the surfing metaphor of like, why is surfing so challenging, or why is it so frustrating maybe in the beginning, is because of the steep learning curve, right? It's challenging to really do it all yourself. You could have someone push you into waves,
right?
But you're never going to learn that way.
Right.
You could have someone hold your hand through your whole Bitcoin journey and, you know, do everything for you, but you're never going to learn to take control of your own keys and, you know, keep your own coin in cold storage. So that's what I think is a major hurdle still with Bitcoin, is the steep learning curve, right? How do I even begin to tackle this interdisciplinary complex subject that, oh, I'm not even quite sure what are the credible resources or who's actually telling the truth and providing the information that is, you know, correct. I mean, the whole component of having some crypto sovereignty, to refer to Eric's book, is like really having a stable use and stable means of money, right? And we all know it's kind of been corrupted, and so I think it begins with that, and that's why the Bitcoin path that we're all on is very much a matter of fixing the money. And I think the rest will fall into place there. And of course, it's the hardest, I think, challenge to tackle is money.
I believe it's actually the John Chanot path now that we're all on.
Chanot,
we're all just living
Chanot
in your path. Shadows, John.
Someone's got to pave the way, man. But that's, so that's an interesting point. And we talk a lot about citadels, and I've said before, like, your community is the foundation of your citadel, right? If you want to have a like robust environment to protect yourself and your family, those connections that you form interpersonally within your network, that's going to form the basis of that, like, of that community and that protective environment from which you can go forth and conquer and everything. And even like the sovereigns of old, these kings and like generals we read about in history books, they weren't lone individuals who like conquered large tracts of land, right? It's like they're forming alliances, they're building bonds, and even you have like the legends of the Knights of the Round Table. Like, it was a fellowship with King David, or King Arthur. Or if King David too, if you go biblically, like, King David had his best friend Jonathan, and that's how he was able to rise to power, was through his network. So it's, I think it's really interesting kind of thread to pull on there. And just to kind of like put this into context and bring it to like what we're doing right now, we have by the grace of Swan and what we're trying to do, like even through Pacific Bitcoin, gathering people together in these environments, in these networks, is facilitating something that, like, it's hard to really put it's hard to quantify with numbers, with like metrics and things like that, but we're facilitating space for humans who are really interested in Bitcoin, who are very active in the space, to connect and like build relationships. And I think like when we're going in on a hike, when we're going surfing, or when we're doing all these kinds of activities, we're going on adventures together, like, how much more is our friendship and our like bonds developed through that process? Like, it's super powerful.
Yeah, because if you can't talk about the price action of Bitcoin that day on a hike, like, what's the point of the hike anyways? You know, you're just sitting there,
yeah,
like,
exactly, like,
what else are you gonna talk about?
Hike with normies?
Yeah,
what the fuck,
talk about, like, I don't know, interest rates.
So boring, man.
Since we're Normie on the subject life. Of price action, Mr. Analyst, you know, we had some rather underwhelming price action after the, you know, decision by SEC to not appeal the Grayscale court decision. And yeah, I think people have been like super eager to just see Bitcoin move, even if it's in a way we don't want to see it move. Like, the, you know, people are getting impatient, and I think that's the best time to really be stacking, in my opinion. So what's going on year end into 24?
Give us some fancy metrics.
So I do data analytics at Swan. I don't do much around predicting future price. If I did, I'd probably be, you know, owning this villa and half the country here, living off volcano energy. But what I do see is how people respond to price. And people are really interested in high volatility. So it's those moments of high volatility when there's a lot of excitement around what's Bitcoin doing now? Is there going to be a big move? So one example that I can think of is with all those ETF rumors earlier this year, or the filing of those applications by a bunch of different companies. And I'm not especially excited for an ETF from a technical reason. Like, my interest in Bitcoin comes from more interesting ideas than having a regulated financial product on markets. But it is interesting to see how people buy the rumors and they want to front run these ETFs. So we saw the price bump up a little bit, I guess past 30K or so. And I try not to follow the price, but it's part of my job. So, you know, got to do what I got to do. And then recently, with all the ETFs delayed, or at least the reviews delayed, we saw the price dip as the excitement went down, and I guess people were unloading Bitcoin. But it is interesting to see and think about who are these organizations and people who were buying into Bitcoin with the hopes of that big, big move, but then selling off, I guess, to allocate capital elsewhere. Maybe if you'd put into Nvidia or a big AI tech stock like that, so potentially there's a correlation there. But it is interesting how there were people who thought an ETF would be good for the price of Bitcoin, but they weren't willing to leave their capital there to play a more long-term game, because it seems pretty likely that one will be approved. Now, I have no idea. There's definitely a world where it just takes 10, 50, 100 years, but I just see it as someone who has a much longer-term viewpoint of how Bitcoin's going to play out, to see the short-term movement in Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin is, we understand it as this very long-term project, but in the long run, or in the grand scheme of things, it's still quite small and just a part of the broader global fiat, however you want to describe it, economic system. So I wonder how you guys feel about that and any other ideas around there.
You mentioned price action, and obviously within every human there's a war going on inside between the degenerate gambler and the disciplined long-term holder. You know, it's just on what percentage you're at. You may, you know, I don't care how disciplined of a holder there is. Like, you know, I say all the time, any Bitcoin I buy is fiat taking a one-way trip to Bitcoin, never to come back. But that's just someone that has their...
Except for here. El Salvador.
Yeah. That's just someone that has their inner degenerate gambler kind of caged up and under control. People love the price action. Even someone that is, hey, I'm holding for the long run and I have plans to build long-term wealth, when they see the volatility, even though that gambler is caged up inside, he's cheering from the cage like, yeah, yeah, you know? And so, you know, that's never going to change. And Bitcoin teaches us to have a long-term outlook. We talk about the time preference. It's interesting with the ETF. You know, I'm thinking a lot more about Bitcoin and the different facets of it. We talk about Bitcoin a lot altogether, or a lot of spaces. People say Bitcoin isn't getting adopted at the rate it should be. Well, what part of Bitcoin? Because this ETF signals that as an asset, it's come along very far. If you're getting to the point where some of the largest asset managers are willing to put their reputation on the line, whether it's for good causes, unlikely, or bad causes just to make money, right? They just see Bitcoin as something that the holders are reliable, so why not take advantage of things like the halving or the economic outlook ahead of the election and get our clients some money. It's come along enough as an asset to get there. Then you come down here, and there's a lot of great things happening with Bitcoin as a unit of exchange, but there's also, it maybe isn't as far along yet, right? People still need to learn about it. And when you're talking to people in places where Bitcoin is accepted, you do have people that are not into it. You have places that don't accept it, and it's not as far along. So it's interesting as an asset, you know, where things are at. You guys have all read about the theory of money. You know, there's a lot of theories that are, you know, before something can become a unit of exchange, it has to become a commodity with a fixed memory of what that commodity is worth in something that's relatable, whether it's dollars. So we're seeing as an asset, people are starting, I would say, I'm curious to hear what you guys think. People are starting to get a memory of how much Bitcoin should or shouldn't be worth in their mind. Even some of the people that bought, even though some people are miseducated and go, well, Bitcoin just dropped, it's over because it went from 70. They know 70 was its all-time high. And I bet you could go to a lot of people that don't know much about Bitcoin and go, just what do you think's the most it ever hit? And they go, I don't know what, 69, 70,000? That's price memory. And that price memory is getting built. The ETF is a part of that journey. And, you know, that appeal, I don't think anyone was expecting huge action because there's still more to the story that has to now come back to grayscale and there's a bunch of deadlines that kick the can. But when that happens and occurs, we will, I believe, you know, and this is not debatable, have crossed a major place in the road as for Bitcoin, the asset and its journey. There'll be some good and bad with that too, of course.
And I think being down here in El Salvador in particular has shown how much work there is to do around Bitcoin still. So as an example, just today, we were trying to pay cash. Well, we had to pay cash for our USD cash for our parking spot by the waves. And so we went over to the Chivo wallet, the Chivo ATM to go trade some Bitcoin for US dollars so we could pay for our parking spot. And the ATM only accepted on-chain payments, and it ran out of tickets that would print a QR code for you to scan to get a receipt or get dollars. I wasn't sure exactly what the issue was, but it just showed how many pain points there were for people, even in Bitcoin country,
right,
El Salvador, right, in their Bitcoin journey. And imagine you're an El Salvadorian, you receive some Bitcoin for the first time in your Chivo wallet, you go to the ATM, and then you experience a problem like that. Well, how are they going to feel? Bitcoin's broken. Bitcoin doesn't work. We met some people on a hike who are originally from El Salvador, but live in the U.S. now. We told them we were down here for Bitcoin-related reasons, and they said, well, what Bitcoin, like, what happened? It's not working. Like, because the El Salvador first announced they were buying in and adopting it, and the price has gone down a lot. So it's easy for us to be so deep in our own rabbit holes with Bitcoin and understand it at such a high level, have a long-term mentality, but as a tool that people actually need to go about their day-to-day lives, it has a lot of work to do. So I'm interested to see how that develops over time.
Yeah, I always try to talk to people when I'm down here, and I'm more interested in people who are kind of opposed to Bitcoin than people who are on board, because there's a lot to learn there. You know, I connected with my guy who I got a ride from the airport, the same guy from last trip. So we got to continue the convo. Hey, what's going on with Bitcoin? You know, I do it in Spanish right now, but this would break the whole episode. You know, and he's like, you know, I'm still not into it. And I go, you know, how come? He goes, because too much, you know, too much like this. So it's no good. And I talked to him on the ride down today, and I was like, that's because it's no good for using it in that form. And sure, I can understand that. If you are giving rides and you're getting $500 in rides, and then you're going to hold that money to get things for the family, yeah, that's a problem right now in Bitcoin because of the volatility. But I was like, but you don't have to use it that way. Well, how you want to use it is accepting Bitcoin. You can convert what you need to dollars, pay your short-term costs, start putting small amounts, because he has two kids and we've talked on FaceTime with the family. What are you going to leave for the family? And really the access here, it's not stocks. It may not be real estate, maybe out of reach. They're not getting maybe bonds, right? Like access to high-end assets that'll yield return, not there. And then it kind of clicked in about like, okay, I can sock away some Bitcoin, and yes, it'll go like this, but fast forward to 20 years, I believe without a doubt, it will be significantly higher than it is now. And that's based off of history, where the price has been, that trajectory. Another person I talked to, my guy Punta Roca, Bob, who I was close to orange pilling, but he's anti-tech overall. You know, he just got the iPhone. But I showed up and I owe him a board. I'm sorry, Bob, like I got your board. But his payment system was down and I didn't, you know, he was having a stressful time and I wanted to be like, dude, we almost orange pilled you last time. Like, you got Lightning on the phone, you can take that. But it, you know, he would have snapped. But it was just a good example about, you know, that was the reason why we tried to orange pill him specifically, was to have a backup in case the you know, his point of sale system from 1998 broke down, he could have something easy on the phone in the short term. So interesting perspectives, lots of learning, and that's one of the cool things about El Salvador is you can not only come here and surf, but you can talk to people who are living the experiment in real time and learn and then bring that home.
Your discussions with the Salvadorians here around whether to save in Bitcoin or in dollars are really interesting, Dom, because El Salvador is a unique country in that they were dollarized. So mm-hmm. when they adopted Bitcoin, they already had the dollar. Yep. And a lot of the monetarily struggling countries, think of Argentina, Venezuela, Turkey, and others, they are not on the dollar. So it's, if you look at Bitcoin in lira or bolivars or Argentine pesos, it's straight up, even with the price, with the I guess decline from the highs of the 2021 bull market. So if you're Salvadorian, there's an interesting choice there. Do I save in this new currency that our government imposed relatively top down, or do we rely on the US dollar, the global reserve currency, to save our wealth? And going around El Salvador, it seems like a lot of the excitement around Bitcoin is largely from people from other countries eager to spend it here. So I think it's important that we be realistic with expectations for El Salvador, while also recognizing that it's a long-term thing. For Bitcoiners, we, as much as we talk about being patient and having a lower time preference, we can get so excited about spreading the word about this that we see other people not being as excited as us.
Yeah.
And even in a country where it's no capital gains tax, or a lot of the barriers to entry are lowered, or barriers to using Bitcoin as designed are lowered. And we just have mixed thoughts about that. I myself feel like not disappointed, but just appreciative that I was able to come down here and actually see what it's like on the ground, get away from the hype, and even recognize that we're in El Zante, we're in the vanguard of Bitcoin adoption in El Salvador.
I was gonna say real quick, you know, this trip that here in April was a big reason why I came up with a something that I felt worked for the firefighters in Santa Monica to be the first union to adopt Bitcoin. If I didn't come here, and I'm gonna explain this, you know, at the non-convention Bitcoin. Adopting Bitcoin, and then the day before there's the, it's called the not convention or the
unconference.
But no joke, coming from this trip, talking to people about what they saw wrong with Bitcoin helped me come back home and go, why has no union self-custodied Bitcoin? And again, a lot of learning lessons here. There's too much at stake, the volatility. I wrote down all the things that would, if I was, you know, sitting in a group or organization, why I would not want to adopt Bitcoin, and then built a model around that. And so if we can, you know, I only use that example because it was so closely tied to my experience here and what I learned. But coming to a place, talking to people, and talking to the people that are not on board with Bitcoin and figuring out why is really pivotal in developing ways to orange pill new groups, because you can address all those things that you're learning in real time, and you don't delegitimize those when you're talking to folks and say, oh, you're worried about the volatility, you're misinformed, you don't know what you're talking about, it's not volatile. That's incorrect. It is volatile. And so you have to go, okay, fine, there's volatility, how do we now build a model that you can overcome that? Whether it's someone driving out here, whether it's a union, and you go through all these items, and then when you take the boogeyman out of the closet, you're left with just a pure starting point to understand Bitcoin through education. So that was, you know, that was huge in my trip coming back home. I'm sure you will go back and, you know, those things you're working on, that's going to change your view and the way you see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before we pass it back to you, John, I kind of attribute the reluctancy of everyday Salvadorians to use Bitcoin because what is Bitcoin down here? It's legal tender. And what does that mean? It's, you know, brought on by the government.
Yeah.
And for the opposite reasons we use Bitcoin in the U.S. is to what? Escape the government's hold on money. So overall, I don't think nation state adoption is a bad thing, but I do think it is a hurdle for people psychologically to use a money that, historically speaking, in a place that's had dictators, right? There's just overall mistrust of the government. And going back to just why I asked about price action, one, the listeners probably enjoy it, so you're welcome. But yeah, to sort of derail what we were talking about is we all have, it's our human nature to get excited about it as absolutely much as we might lie to people that we don't look at Bitcoin price. It's a way, at least in before there's a full global Bitcoin standard, it is a way to measure our purchasing power. And into the future, as we try to plan our lives, set ourselves up for lifestyles like, you know, we're enjoying right now, it does matter where price is going and how we can best position ourselves. So that's really only the reason I think, you know, people do enjoy hearing price speculation from different perspectives, as credible or as not as that person might be. You're on the credible side considering you got all the data.
You know what you could probably do? Someone that's like, oh, I don't look at price. If you force them to say, answer this question as fast as possible, I'm going to ask it to you, and you have to answer in 1 second. You go, what was the price on February 3rd, 2023? And they go, they write the number. It's probably like spot on. It's like cataloged in their subconscious. And you go like, yeah, you don't check price. Okay. You just called this day, you know, a year ago because you checked the price that day 67 times. And somewhere in your brain is an active price chart with points on it that exist in your brain because of how many times you check the price. It is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, hey, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to become more wealthy, right? And wanting the number to go up to increase your own...
surf more, work less.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the whole point of money is to store your time and energy for the future so that you can stabilize your environment so that you can focus on things that are more meaningful to you and than like just trying to fucking survive, which to me is that's a beautiful thing. Like if that aspect of your life, and I'm speaking from personal experience, like if money is in question, if you don't know how you're going to pay the next month's rent or something like that, then you're in a crisis. Like, it's very hard to focus on other things, like how to better society, how to improve your relationships, when you're in survival mode 24/7, which is how like a whole lot of the world is living right now, and which, in my mind, is why many of them are so manipulative or able to be manipulated and sucked into so many of these like
scratcher tickets,
dramas,
lottery tickets, get rich quick
schemes. Yeah. Well, sure, scams, but also what I'm talking about are like the current thing narratives, like
The latest fad
and the latest things to get outraged
suits
about, like,
yeah, oxygen restricting masks.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you're in this like low vibrational energy. If you want to talk about like spiritualize it a little bit, you're in a low vibrational energy space, and the things that you resonate with are anger, are like resentment. You're jealous. You are like going to be drawn and able, you're going to react a lot more to these types of things that are going on, and when people can piss you off like that and can pull those emotional strings, then they have you like a puppet. They're able to kind of like bring you in whatever direction they want. People meaning just like institutions or companies or governments, yeah, or whoever it is that wants to, you know, utilize your time and your attention. That's really what's going on right now. Like, but if your value is being stored in something that's like not able to be confiscated, not able to be debased, you know, and you can travel anywhere you want and use it and transfer it for goods and services, that's you know, then you're able to kind of rise above to like higher levels of energy, in my opinion.
Think about too what you said with like most of the people are working check to check, you know, they're just working to get by, they're in that mindset. In order to get out of that, if you want to do it with certainty without taking big gambles, that's why the lottery is up to 1.7 billion, right? Because right, you go, all right, I'm gonna change the future of my family with this one ticket. In reality, though, going back to someone, let's just say, you know, in a different country who can, let's say they make $50 a week and they can only afford to put into Bitcoin 10 cents a week. And then you go, okay, that person has to have the discipline and the foresight to go, I will not be that millionaire in my family, but I will hand my kid something of value that will continue to have value. And maybe that you were only putting 10 cents away, but you know what? Before you pass or when you pass, your kid now gets something that has a value of $1,000, which to us is like, what's that? But if you're here, maybe that's massive, right? And then that person has to also carry on that discipline to go, you know what? I'm not going to be that millionaire, but I can sock away and add to this generational asset, and I'll hand it to the next kid. And that becomes, you know, 50,000 or 100. And the next generation gets, you know, more. And that's when you get that opportunity that you never had for that generation to kind of change the outcome of like, hey, our family's now on the map. We started a local law office that now became, you know, but the discipline to do that is insane. And that's why, unless you give into that and go, you know what, I may not be without some incredibly good fortune and some great ideas and some insane talent, I may not become a billionaire, you know, in this lifetime and be that person, but I will build the wealth, you know, through the family. And you got to have that discipline, because like I said, inside of us is that degenerate gambler, and you have that discipline, you go, you know what, I'm not going to use my spare dollar this week to put into Bitcoin, I'm gonna buy the lottery because I just am tired of this life. Right. So these are the things that, you know, it's going to take a while to learn about wealth. I was never someone that was educated on this. I learned late. I know for a lot of us, like,
yeah,
you know, going back, rich dad, poor dad, like my dad was a working dude, and learning these lessons primarily came through Bitcoin. But I am committed to maybe not, you know, hitting a home run in this lifetime, but I will walk the line and have something of value to pass on in the future.
It's funny you bring up rich dad, poor dad. My dad actually introduced me to that book when I was like 11 years old. And I remember sitting in my fifth grade classroom reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. The teacher's probably like, what the hell is this kid doing? Like, does he have a job? What assets is he buying? But so it's been a while since I've read the book, but I just remember what stuck out to me most is assets versus liabilities. So I feel fortunate that from a young age, I had an understanding that cars are a liability, consumable goods, these things that are often used to show status but are losing value over time are going to end up costing you more in the long run, and it's better to store your time and energy in assets which are going to at least retain value for you. And I think that's even that approach just in life of what are your assets and what are your liabilities from a friendship, from a lifestyle and habits perspective, are something that are worth considering and thinking about. And I've never really thought about it from that perspective until this very show, so thank you guys. But yeah, it's what are your assets, what are your liabilities, and how can you leverage those, minimizing your liabilities and making the best of your assets.
Yeah, there's something to be, I think there's always takeaways from having these sorts of conversations, and it helps you discover maybe a little bit more about yourself, as much as like it's a back and forth and we're exploring new ideas. It's like all part of this journey of discovery that we're still on every day. And even if, yeah, we're not the next, you know, person who can buy a rocket to send people up, and like we'll still have a lasting impact for our families, for, you know, future generations. So I think people forget that time is on our side, and you're exactly where you need to be, and everything that happens here thereafter will, you know, be exactly of your choosing. So know that time works in your advantage. I think the universe wants to prosper. So if you set those intentions and live super true to yourself, I think things will go in your way.
100%. I think intention is a huge topic and belief of mine. Like it's the way that our soul kind of interfaces with the world. Not to get too deep at the end here, do want to wrap things up, but like if you think about what consciousness is, like how we're kind of this like almost black hole of awareness that's absorbing, bringing out all this information input in, and through that we're selecting which sets of information to focus on, and then within that certain like limited amount of information that we're paying attention to, we're making value judgments like every single moment on like what to actually focus on, what things to pay attention to, what not to pay attention to, who to be with, who to not to be with. And those judgments, you know, the more we're like if we are able to like set an intention of what we want our world to be like, I think that has a tremendous impact on like our actual like achievement of that in the world. Some might call that like manifesting or material. I like to call it materializing, because you're like imagining a certain future. As Bitcoiners, we're all kind of like collectively materializing this like bright orange future that we might one day experience, or our kids might one day experience, where we have this true method of value transfer that's empowering individuals all around the world and uniting individuals in this like communal way. So yeah, I think it's awesome. Guys, thank you so much for like being a part of this conversation. Are there any final thoughts that you have before we wrap up?
I had a final thought. As you were throwing down that beautiful oration on consciousness, literally a 20-foot wave crashed behind you, and I was just thinking, like, thank God I'm not out there right now, you know?
I'm with you, man. I'm very happy to be on dry land at this particular moment.
Yeah, as you're talking about where our attention goes, Dom and I are both like, know, right? Look at this set I'm coming like, in.
Guys, John I was about something. To channel. This was about... It would have been great. It would have been amazing.
John saying something profound over here, and clearly our intentions are maybe to go surf this afternoon. But I appreciate you guys having this conversation. Like I said, I always discover more things about myself and help to, you know, spread the education and just good vibes into the surf and Bitcoin communities out there in the world. So.
Just to close out on one last surf and Bitcoin analogy. So when it comes to Bitcoin, where do we all want the price to go? To the
moon.
What causes the waves?
The moon.
Think about it.
As we have a supposed solar eclipse today.
And what wallet don't I use anymore?
Moon.
And what kind of tail is on the back of the Pacific Bitcoin longboard?
Moon tail.
A moon tail. It's all connected, bro. Oh, man. Well, thank you guys for listening. And with that, I like to say, may you live a meaningful life and enjoy your freedom as a sovereign individual.